very glad that Mani talked for me. Some of the things that I'm going to say are somehow related to what he's doing, but I'm going to take a slightly different perspective. So I'm going to focus not on fine-grained sensor networks today. I'm going to focus on sensing and actuation, but which can be done in heavier duty. And I think one of the reasons is, you know, we are in the age of system building, you know, smart energy grids, smart traffic light systems, and so on. And there may not be such fine-grained resource constraint things. So I want to talk about things in this edge, okay? The objective here is to, the critical resource here is designer's time. How easy it is to put together an application. Okay, so you want to provide all the right interfaces, abstractions, architecture to compose systems. That's the idea. Number two, there are some issues related to actually what Greg was saying, which is how do you grow applications rather than revolutionarily develop applications, but I'm not sure I'll have time to get into that. Okay, so I think, first let me set a little bit of a historical context. If you think of the first generation of control systems as analog control systems, the technology for that was electronic feedback amplifiers. And that technology created a need for theory, which was met by Bode, Evans, Nyquist, and so on. Then starting about 40 years ago, the era of digital control began. And you could actually compute a little bit before you applied the action. And that computational capability again led to a need for theory, and I actually believe that people like Kalman and so on came along at historically the right time to take advantage of this. So the whole state space design mushroomed, Kalman filtering, H infinity, and so on more recently, and on the computer science side, supported by developments in real time scheduling, LULIM, and so on. Okay. But this paradigm is pretty aging now. Over the past 40 years, you know, computers, I think there's a statistic on Jack's web page that says that, Jack's Tangled Web page, which says 98% of computers are embedded and it's going 100% or something like that. Wireless and wireline networking, which actually make deployment much easier. And then, of course, there have been a lot of revolutions in software, the whole object oriented. So, that raises a lot of issues. And what I'm going to talk about is, I'll get ultimately to mathematical challenges and opportunities. Towards the end, there'll actually be a couple of theorems. Let's go back, okay, and look at history of computing, communication control. So the IBM 360 was the first general purpose computer, and in fact, it was called 360 to denote this all-round capability. It had a lot of beautiful innovations. I mean, the notion of interfaces, portability, assured through high-level languages, reusability through component libraries, and so on. Okay? And all of us, of course, are familiar with the networking stack. And de facto architecture is TCP/IP right now. And all of you are familiar with this layered approach to breaking problems and solving them at different layers. And of course, the mechanism is for implementation is through the header of the packet. Okay? So encapsulation of packets. Now, so we want to build general purpose systems, just like general purpose computing, general purpose networking, we want to build general purpose systems, okay? And we want to build them with also operational control applications with generic components in a standard framework. And if you go back in history, this is the PID controller. Beautiful, this drives all of the industry, all your chemical refineries, oil plants, etc. Generic tunable component, standard interfaces, easy to integrate. So when we move to these kinds of complicated systems where you have sensing, actuation, communication, computation going on, what is the architecture of these third generation control systems? Okay, so that's the, so from my outline here, this is the topic I'm on. Okay, so let me show you, start with our lab here. So we have a lab where we have cars which are being sensed through vision cameras up here. There's image processing going on. And there's actually an ad hoc network here, if you can see the laptops. There's planning all the layers of decision making, from following, from regulation to set point generation to tracking to supervision to coordination, to everything is there. Planning, replanning, and each of these cars is controlled by one of these laptops. So this is a completely closed loop system. It's closed over vision, closed over ad hoc wireless networking. But actually, what is of interest to us is it's closed over middleware. Okay. So this is a movie. I don't think there is a sound port here. So if you can hear it. You see this interplay between differential dynamics and logical dynamics. And this is an application. So this lead car is human driven, one of my students. And these two cars follow in formation. So pursuit evasion, zero sum. And he tries to shake these people off here. Wondering what the system will do next, right? Anyway, so okay, so let me first talk of an abstraction of virtual co-location. So we have this system here. We have this car. We have an actuator. We have all the layers of decision making. We have sensing. In fact, lots of sensors, so we have data fusion and so on. And it's not just one car, it's a lot of cars. And of course, you have to make sure that they're all coordinated and so on. Now, if you were trying to directly design to this view, that would be extremely complicated. I mean, the IP addresses are different. The notion of measurement of time here is different from there, and everything. It would be very complicated. So what we want to do is we want to reduce that to this kind of an abstraction. So what is this abstract? This is not a linear system or anything, but if you go back to old electrical engineering textbooks of 40 years ago, you have this notion of signal flow graphs, right? So the way you hook up things just by drawing lines, right? So we want to do the same thing in software. We want to compose systems just by hooking them. That's the idea. So we want to think of composition, essentially. Okay, bunch of inputs, bunch of outputs. Okay, now, let me elaborate a little bit on that. So first, of course, we have the abstraction of nodes, okay? And then your link layer in your networking stack manufactures the abstraction of a link. Then your routing or whatever network layer manufactures the abstraction of a graph. Okay, after that, you don't need to worry about the links. And then your transport layer manufactures the abstraction of pipes. So you just drop packets, files here, they show up here. And if you think about it, the natural progression of ideas from nodes to links to graphs to pipes it seems natural that the next thing should be to think of the entire system as one co-located entity. That's the view you want to present to the designer. Okay? You don't want the designer, control designer, to worry about the details of the system. Okay? So I call that the virtual co-location layer. And how you program that, the application layer, is just a standard component sort of an architecture. So for example, if you're an expert in deadlock avoidance, you write a few lines of code for your algorithm. Or if you're a carbon filtering expert, you write a few lines of code there. Okay? Okay, and these components may be running on different nodes and so on. They may also be migrating. And middleware takes care of all of it. Okay, it manages it. So the way to think about it is if you think of distributed Bellman Ford or some generalization of that manufacturing the network layer, or TCP or UDP manufacturing the transport layer, then this virtual co-location layer is manufactured by middleware, which our particular version we call Etherware. Okay, and it gives you a lot of system attributes. So you also have this notion of services. For example, clock could be a service. And the application layer can either use these services, or for example, the notion of the particular cars on the street could be a service composed of from other services. Okay? And the application interacts with the services and also the virtual co-location. Okay, so the idea is with minimal reconfiguration and reprogramming to build these sensor actuator systems. See, the last thing software engineers want to do is write code. Everybody wants to reuse code. So how do we make it easy to build these things? So let me show you an application. Now this actually, there's a fair amount of complexity here. Maybe I should pause it here. So we had a German student visiting here, and I have nothing against Germans. But he was a German management student, and he came, he had to graduate in a year. So towards tail end, he has to do some kind of a project. So he came to me and said, is there something to do? So I said, okay, let's see if our claims of easily being able to build systems given our middleware are in fact true. So let's build a collision avoidance system. And he did an object-oriented programming, but within a few months, it's done. Okay, so this is what you're going to see. Champagne, you have a county fair where you pay to see this. Now see the complexity of the application here. This car is stuck, so this is hybrid logic that kicks in, and he's going to find an alternative plan while doing collision avoidance. So let me say a little bit about, so far I've been talking about the architecture of the infrastructure. How do you support, how do you support the commonality that applications need, okay? But I want to switch gears a little bit and talk of the application architecture itself for robustness. How do you design that application to be robust? Okay, so let us start with the sensor, okay? And the sensor aperiodically samples the environment. Why aperiodic? Because some images may take more time to process than some other images if they have more interesting information. Whatever it is, that's what a sensor does. And then, let us say that we take the sensor measurements and we ship them across a multi-hop network to some point. Now, one thing that wireless networks, no matter what, even the internet, we don't have QoS. So packets could get lost or randomly delayed, okay? Now, on the other hand, controller designers have, over the past few decades, honed to perfection this design paradigm, this digital control. You periodically sample the measurements and periodically output actions. So this is a fantastic science, right? Now you have to somehow interpolate these two things if you're going to use control theory for these kinds of environments. Okay, then after that, let us say you calculate the action and then you may ship it back over the network. And there again, packets may get lost or delayed. And then ultimately, let us suppose your action does in fact make it to the actuator, which could be a steering wheel or a gas pedal or something, then you drive your car. But things can go wrong, right? So this is where the notion of robustness of the system comes in. So let us suppose, so the first thing that we're going to do is introduce time translation, okay? So what we're simply going to do is there's going to be a clock synchronization. There is a clock synchronization which algorithm running, whereby you dereference packets back to their time of origin. So I'm not making the packets arrive any earlier, but I just tell you exactly what time they should have got there. Okay, so you know the birth time of each packet. So that adds to the integrity of the measurements, because it's not just value the measurement, but it's also when it was taken, right, when you're trying to coordinate the image. Okay, now we're going to introduce a state estimator as an architectural buffer. So what do I mean by that? So a state estimator can take past information and predict something about the future. And in fact, you could ask for it to make predictions about the future at periodic times. Of course, the further off in the future you ask for prediction, the greater the variance of the prediction. But that's okay. I am trading off real-time issues for more sophisticated analysis of control systems. So, I mean, for a long time, you ask real-time people, why do you want real-time? Then they say, big application is control, periodic stuff. But control people can design theories which don't necessarily get such exact measurements at exact times, provided you know accurately the time of the measurements you take. Okay, so that's what we want to take advantage of. So in particular, you could ask the state estimator for periodic things, and that, of course, meshes well with the control digital control paradigm. Then the next thing we're going to do is use receiving horizon control. So instead of calculating just the control action for today, I'm going to calculate the control action for the next 10 days. Okay, pre-plan. And then I'm going to take all these actions and then ship them over the network to the actuator. And another architectural device, we're going to have an actuation buffer. So this actuation buffer is going to store these pre-computed actions. And then you consume the most immediate action and drive. However, let's see what happens. What can go wrong? Well, let us suppose that some more time has elapsed and you may or may not have received a packet. Never mind. The state estimator can still grind out periodic estimates of the future. And then your control design, you can still use that and calculate future actions. But now let us say you strip them over the network and the packet gets lost. But that's okay, because we had a backup that was computed, so we could use that. So essentially, we're going to have to be theoretically sophisticated about what we calculated as the backup. But we can do that. And then that you go on. Okay. So this whole idea is, yes?
How is that similar or different from an event?
It is event-based, but I have exact time labels for events. So it is event. So this is event-based with a clock.
Why is that so important to make?
Oh,
it? Yeah.
Actually, that's.
I mean, you said to leverage our understanding of control and the
So that's just a nominal design. So for example, a lot of times they're dictated by the bandwidth of that chamber or something. So there may be some times the channel is happening that you're trying to get. So. But you can use any theory. The whole point is that we can trade off theory for technological efficiency. Trying to make wireless networks deliver all packets and on time is going to take decades, okay? But we can do something more sophisticated. Okay, so the whole idea is that you want to endow components with local temporal autonomy. So what is that? So you want to design systems so that components can tolerate failures of other components at least for some limited amount of time. In fact, the steady state of a large system is that something is, there's some part of it that's always failed. Okay. It'll never be the case that everything is perfectly working. So for example, what we're doing here is if the sensor or the network fails, you don't want the controller to fail, so we're interposing the status. In fact, you can also use this as a procedure to grow the design. So for example, you can keep this and then test this module out by comparison with this. So you can grow systems. Okay, and then your controller has some local temporal autonomy. And similarly, you can insulate the actuator from the controller by doing block computation, receding horizon control, and an actuation buffer, and now you have some autonomy. So the point is, I have a colleague at Illinois, Louis Shah, who says you want to convert dependency relationships to use if available relations. You know, it took me a long time. I had this real-time group at in the computer science department, and for a long time I thought they were doing only real-time. It took me many years to realize that they're really robust systems. So convert dependency relationships to use if available relations. So I don't want to depend on you for my life, but if there's somebody you can help me, I want to take advantage of that. Okay. Now, by doing this, actually, you actually impose some discipline in your coding so that you don't introduce unnecessary dependencies. And that actually makes possible a whole range of other functionalities. For example, automatic restart of failed components, migration of components and so on, which I'm going to illustrate, or component upgrade at runtime. And these things are good for reliability, robustness, integration, initialization, etc. Okay, so let me show you an application here. So you could communicate all the pixels from your camera to this computer, but then you'd be stressing the communication factor. On the other hand, you could say, wait, why don't we just calculate the latitude and longitude of the camera, of the car right there, and just shift the coordinates. But then you may be stressing the video processor. So which one should you do? But that's exactly the kind of situation that we don't want to burden a control designer with. This is a routine decision, and what you should do will depend on whether you do A to 2.11 B or A, or whether you're using a Sony or a Nikon or whatever. So that, and remember, our design objective is to reduce the designer's time. It's not the cost of your computer or energy or whatever in these systems, though there are applications for that sort of things. So I'm thinking heavy duty, as I said. So for example, if a carbon filter is running on this computer and creating a huge excessive communication overhead, then you want to migrate it over here. So here's an application.
We're now going to show how middleware can migrate a component from one computing node to another. In order to demonstrate this, we first have the car just traveling a simple oval trajectory, and we're going to unplug the network card to show you what happens when he loses network connectivity. So we'll unplug now. And he stops. He's not receiving the updates he needs, so he stops. Now, the system is robust to this sort of failure. Plugging him back in, he will recover. It takes a moment for the system to detect that the pieces
of... Even to get it to recover, takes some work, okay?
Therefore, he's recovering.
The design.
And now he's recovered his position. Now we're back to where we were before. In order to show the migration, we will now migrate the process from the laptop on the right to the laptop on the left. Of course, there's nothing to see, which is the beauty of it. But now to show you that that has happened, we're going to unplug the network card again, the network connection again. And now it has no influence. So we have effectively migrated the component from one
kinds of things you will definitely need if you want to build a robust system. Okay, let me talk about the challenging of locating and optimizing control logic. So you already see that we have the technological capability for relocating control logic. What is the optimal way to do that? It turns out we don't know. Theory is way behind technology. So let me talk about that. So over the past 40 years, there has been much success in parametric and non-parametric control system design. So essentially, we have several wonderful methodologies for calculating optimal gains in a linear paradigm, whether it's LQG or H infinity and so on. Also adaptive control, where you Bayesian, non-Bayesian, both. Certain non-linear designs also. But things have changed. So the plant also has become much more complicated. And the controller also is a system in its own right. It's a communication network, right? And it's got computational resources in it. Now, so there are issues like where to locate the controller, where to migrate the controller, when to do it. So for example, if I give you, and it's completely trivial, I can give you a delay profile over the network. For every two end hosts, I can tell you what is the delay, the current routing, and the current loading. And then I say, okay, why don't you optimize your control log for that delay and locate it optimally? Such theories are not there yet. Okay, we need that. So this is the next generation theory that we need. Many, many open problems. Optimizing structure, as I said, and current bottleneck is theory, not technology. Okay, so let me get to a mathematical result. And this is the kind of result I think that we need more of in the future. So let's take a standard plant, okay, where if, my only innovation is to put inputs at the right here and outputs at the left. So this is a standard plant, okay? And the reason is because I want to focus on the communication network as a system. Okay, so that's your net. Let's take a simple network of this. Now, let us suppose that this is a lossy network and packets get dropped. So your sensing is going on here, and this is the interface to your actuator. Okay. Now, question, what is the best location for the control log? And this is and what should the control log be? Now, this kind of problem was studied in the 60s, and the end result is these problems are hopelessly intractable. So this is the old theory of Witzenhausen, and it turns out that when there's something called the when you don't have a classical information pattern, then all these problems are intractable. Even if you take a simple two-stage linear quadratic Gaussian design, you just erase the memory of what action you took yesterday, then the problem is intractable. So if you embed if you put the control somewhere here, then it doesn't know what action actually was taken, because a packet commanding it to take an action have been dropped in the middle. So the problem is intractable. Okay. All right, so how do you deal with this? Here's a theorem. Let us suppose that we assume that all packets are allowed to be infinitely long and contain all the past history. So every time, not only do I tell you today's information, but I tell you entire history of human life. Okay? It's long packets. So the point is that whenever one of those packets reaches you, you're caught up there. It's filled in all the holes in your information. Okay, then you can prove that the control log, the optimal place for the control is actually accurate. Okay? And in fact, a slight strengthening of the separation theorem, you can calculate all the optimal control and so on. Okay? All right. Now, however, this is a over-optimistic assumption. So this cost that it gives you is a lower bound of the feasible. That is something that you certainly cannot beat, and you want to get close to it. Question is, how close are we to the current methods? So now let's look at an upper bound. Let's look at a feasible solution. Let us actually locate the control at the actuator, but you may not get long packets. But doesn't matter, you know what you applied. So you're still in the classical information pattern paradigm. And just to give you an example, this is a lower bound, and this is what you can actually. And we took various random systems, and it seems to be close. So the point is, in many cases, you may actually be quite close to these. Yeah. Oh, in this particular case, we assume that the sampling delay, inter-sampling period for the control is much faster than the network dynamics, so it's not delaying as so much as loss matches. But you can change all these things. So just a Mickey Mouse theory, just which is supposed to be suggested. Okay, so let me now turn to some results about compositionality. Okay, this is an example where there are supposed to be streets here which you cannot see, and there are traffic lights somewhere, and this entire system, there's actually a liveness theorem for the system. Okay. So this is a traffic light over here, and these guys are supposed to politely, or in this particular case impolitely, wait for people to go through. And meanwhile, I think this fellow is parking his car. Okay, but in any case, we have a theory here of how to do these things so that you guarantee the system is live. That is, you never end up in gridlocks. Okay, so that is the, but that kind of a theory is a discrete theory. That is, you reason at the level of bins and so on, not at the level of the continuum, not certainly at the level of differential equations. So the hard question is, how do you integrate all these things? So here's a version zero prototype of a theorem. So let's assume you have renewal tasks. So what it is basically, we'll assume that whenever you finish a task, you'll immediately get another one, which has to be done within a certain amount of time, which may be a good model for video or something. As soon as your frame is done, the next one refreshes. Okay. So there is some scheduling which guarantees some schedulability under some loading system. For the car model, we'll take a very simple kinematic model, okay, with some turn radii and so on. And then we'll have a model of the environment. So there are certain angles of intersections and distances of straightaways in a system, in a town, and so on. And then now we get to the system. We're trying to marry all these theories together with this discrete event system theory, right? Which guarantees. So when you're trying to show liveness, you have a complicated graph of this, okay? For example, I'm not sure I showed this, but even a traffic light is a very complicated graph, just one. Okay, what we can show is that when you compose all these things, then the whole system can be operated without collisions, safely, and without gridlocks, liveness. Now, we need those kinds of results, but for much more heavy-duty applications, if we are going to build systems with assured performance and so on. Now, currently, the middleware that we have doesn't give you any timing properties. So it's just kind of lightly loaded, so it's just at the event level. Okay? But we are trying to build in time into these things so we can do some reliable design. Okay, let me end on a broad note. So we actually, you know, as Greg said, in the post-Maxwell world, post von Neumann, post Shannon, post Bardeen, Brattain. And therefore, I think that the 21st century is actually could be the age of building SaaS, smart systems. As we enter this greater awareness of resource constraints, hopefully, not clearly, whether we still realize that. But we're going to have to take a great, extract maximum efficiencies out of all our systems. But luckily, we have nodes that can compute, communicate, sense, actuate, and so on. Now, if you look at the history of the last 50 years, you could say that it was the age in which several individual disciplines, strong individual disciplines, were built. For example, computation is only about 60 years old. Okay? Kalman, 45 years old. Communication, Shannon, about 50, 60 years old. Signal processing depends on how you measure it, but certainly good utility is about 40 years old. But now we are entering a large, grand unification of all these things. And there actually are some interesting issues. I think it gives rise to different issues at the pedagogical level and at the research level. At the pedagogical level, I think we need to communicate a greater sense of architecture to our students so that they can put things in place, disciplines and so on. And I don't think we do that properly. Even our textbook writing, I think we have been miserable failures. At the research level, on the other hand, you need to train students who can trade off information theory for something in computation or whatever. And that again has all kinds of